Malala Joya was born in a small mountain village in western Afghanistan. 3 days later, a communist coup overthrew the government in Kabul. The Soviet Union invaded not long afterwards. War, she writes, is all we Afghans have known. She lived as a refugee in Iran and Pakistan, ran an underground school for girls during the rule of the Taliban, and went on to become the youngest member of Afghanistan's parliament. She is a staunch advocate for women's rights in a country where such rights often exist only on paper. In her memoir, Joya writes about her family's struggle against Islamic fundamentalists, warlords, and foreign occupation. If you'd like to speak with her about her past and about her country's future, our telephone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Today, Malala joins us from NPR's Bureau in New York. She tells her story in a book called Woman Among Warlords. And Malala Joya, nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you. Thanks for this interview.
And you write that one of your early memories as a child was clinging to your mother's legs while a policeman ransacked your house searching for your father.
Yes, it is true. As when I was child, after 4 days that I brought Russia occupied Afghanistan and their puppets came in power. So their situation was very risky for freedom-loving fighters, especially Democrat people of my country. As my father was one of Democrat person who was a student of university, and when they occupied my country together with other freedom-loving fighters, they start to fight against occupation. That's why they killed millions of Afghan, innocent Afghan, and also thousand Democrat in Afghanistan. And my father was one of those that fortunately he did a struggle against, and now he's alive.
Yes, but he lost his leg, and there were many months after the incident in which he was injured when you didn't know whether he was dead or alive.
No, never. I know, as in this book also, you can read some stories that when I was baby that he lost one of his leg and have to leave Afghanistan and went to refugees, means neighbor countries. After 4 years, when I was 4 years old, I left Afghanistan, and for the first time I met my father. As my uncle, older brother of my father, took care of our family as well, and he was very close to me and very kind to me, and I called him always daddy, father. So for me, it was difficult to accept that this is not my father, and means that my uncle is not my father, and my father is my father.
There's a touching story you tell after your family moves to the Iran to be with your father, who's in exile there in a refugee situation. And he overhears you, a small child, one day singing a silly song about my father only has one leg.
Yeah, still my family remember, and friend of my father also, they jokes, because first time that I accept that, yes, this is my father, and I was singing that silly song that, as you said, with myself, and my father, I didn't know that he was listening to me, and when he recognized, I was shying and just laughed.
Yes, because he understood at that moment you accepted him as your father.
Yes.
Yes. Then later your family moves to Pakistan, to a refugee camp, first in Quetta and then up in near Peshawar. And these are, well, millions of Afghans were forced into refugee status during the struggle against the Soviet occupation and later during the Civil War.
Yes.
But this was where you first became exposed to the politics as you tried to go to school to get an education.
Yeah, well, like as you said, like many other Afghan, millions of Afghan, we also become refugee. And because in Iran was not no school for girls and Afghan boys, in Pakistan was. On that time, in refugee school, that in eighth class in high school, when I was, I started to be a social activist. And in the morning, I was a student of the school, and the evening, I was a teacher for literacy courses. So we belong to political situation. We are war generation, as I said. I was 4 days old baby that Russia occupied Afghanistan. Then criminal Mujahideen came in power, these warlords, the civil war from 92 to 96. Then Taliban, these fascist people, came in power. Then back after 9/11 tragedy, these warlords, these criminal Mujahideen with mask of democracy, they came in power. And we saw nothing in our life, just war and these violences. And I believe even children of Afghanistan do politics. Even stones of Afghanistan, if could speak, did politics. Seem like children of Palestine that always inspired me that they fight against occupation, even children with a stone.
And there is, you've described a lot of history in very quick terms there, but there is a chapter of your story that I think most people would find fascinating. And this is during the rule of the Taliban. Your family returns home to Western Afghanistan. And in fact, you run an underground school to teach girls.
Yes, I was activist of an organization of promoting Afghan women capabilities called OPAC. Even on that time was not registered. They had health and education activities for women and children, underground activities, especially in the period of Taliban in 98. That I was famous in the camp that they, this NGO, they did campaign for, they were searching for activists, and they contacted me. And I liked their idea and as a social activist because there was no education for girls and women. So that's why I moved with my family, as my father is Democrat and they were agree. And we moved to Herat, and they are also underground activist I was, and since after 2001, and still there. But now when you compare my life with the dark period of Taliban as activist, and now, on that time it was risky, but now even with Burqa bodyguard is not safe, as many assassination attempts did, and changing the safe house to safe houses, many death threats receiving, not only me, many other Democrats of my country, these social activists and political Democrat activists.
Well, we'll get to the present day in just a moment, but I think listeners would be interested to hear. You were forced during the Taliban time to wear the burqa, a piece of clothing which you detest. Nevertheless, it made it possible for you to smuggle school books underneath it without being detected.
Yeah, it is true. It was difficult, really, that how to learn wear burqa. I said some funny memory in the meantime, not only sad that how my other friends, these colleagues of OPAC and even my father was saying that among all women, when I see you, I recognize who you are, because it was really difficult how to wear.
He said you walked like a penguin.
Yes. But now, even with burqa and bodyguard, as I said, it's not safe. And now this disgusting burqa, which for me, as always, I'm saying this is like symbol of oppression, and I'm sure for most of women of my country, and it's like shroud for life body. But now it gives lives.
Let me ask you a question. You describe the situation of your country over the past 30 years, and of course much suffering caused by the Soviet invasion and occupation and the long war then, as you mention it, the terrible civil war, which Americans know relatively little about, that followed, and then the Taliban, which came to power, and then of course the war that has continued ever since September the 11th in the United States and NATO forces led, a war which you say, describe as just another occupation. And you describe the terrible criminals, you say, the warlords, many of whom are in power now. Yet you also say in your book, and I wanted to ask you about this, it's a statement of great optimism, a longing for freedom beats in every Afghan's heart, and we have eventually repelled every foreign occupier. After all of that, the fundamentalists, the warlords, the Taliban, you believe that a longing for freedom beats in every Afghan heart?
You know, in the mind and also in the hearts of my people, this criminal has already brought to the court, has been faced to the court. People do not support them. Karzai's corrupt mafia system is a good example how much it is weak. And this election is another example, not non-democratic election. Millions of Afghans, they did not attend in the election. And now that my voice become a small voice of these voiceless people, that the reason I'm alive, that because of support of these poor people. And they wish that one day these criminals must be bring to the National International Criminal Court, but they imposed on my people. That was the main reason of the wrong policy of U.S. government and its allies, that they replaced one terrorist like Taliban with another terrorist, this warlord, this criminal. So that's why situation of Afghanistan goes toward disaster, and especially for women in most of provinces, it's like hell. First of all, they changed my country to the center of track.
Let's get a caller in on the conversation, and Pauline is with us. Pauline, calling from East Hampton in New York.
Yes, hi. I wanted to ask you, I just got a little bit of a hint of how you feel from your last statement, but I wanted to ask you how Afghans feel about the American occupation right now and the ratcheting up of the occupation. There's a lot of reporting here that tries to tell us that the Afghans want the Americans in to protect them from the Taliban. Can you give us a little more insight into that?
Yes, why not? You know, my people now, they sandwich between two powerful enemies. From the sky, these occupation forces bombing and killing innocent civilians under the name of Taliban, most of them women and children. In the ground, these warlords and Taliban are now negotiating with each other, continue to their fascism. For example, these occupation forces, as they did bombing in Farah province, maybe you hear through media, and one day more than 150 civilians has been killed. Even they used white phosphorus and cluster bomb. I think democracy never come by white phosphorus or cluster bomb or by war. Also, on 9th of September, they did bombing in Kunduz province this month recently. And 200 civilians has been killed. After all of these crimes, White House says, apologize, and Canada's puppet corrupt mafia system says, thank you. No, my people fed up. They don't want to listen anymore. Thank you and apologize. Even they are bombing our wedding parties, what they did in Jalalabad and also Nuristan, that day by day civilians are the victim. You can go and see Professor Mark Herald websites, and these troops themselves are the victim of the wrong policy of their government, as they send them for bad cause, for war. Mm. I said condolences, and I say condolence to those family who lost their sons, but they must raise their voice against this wrong policy. But now Obama want to surge more troops in Afghanistan, which will bring...
I don't mean to cut you off. And Pauline, thank you very much for the call, but we just have a minute left, and I wanted to ask you, if U.S. forces did withdraw, which you want them to do, why would we think for a moment that it would not either be the Taliban or the warlords still in control in Afghanistan?
When these occupation forces stop bombing and killing civilians, and their government do not support warlord and Taliban, then, as I said, now we are fighting two enemies, against occupation and these warlords and Taliban. With the withdrawal of one enemy, it's much easier to fight against one enemy instead of two. If really Obama honest for my people first, must end this occupation, they are saying civil war will happen, but today itself is like civil war. We do not have security. Poverty, corruption is increasing rapidly in Afghanistan. Situation of women is getting disaster. Obama, first of all, must say apologize to my people and bring this criminal Bush to the International Criminal Court. And many Bush in power in Afghanistan, now they are negotiating with Taliban, put soft name on Taliban, these terrorists, as a moderate, while we have no moderate Talib. Obama must support democratic-minded people of my country, while we have a lot. There are many risks for them. Educationally support my people, and also that together with UN and must stop neighbor countries like Iran, Pakistan, Russia, Uzbekistan that support Taliban and these warlords. So as long as these occupation forces be in Afghanistan, the worst civil war will be.
Malala Joya, we thank you for your time today and good luck with the book. I should note you said some facts about the bombing in Kunduz, which are disputed by the U.S. government about the use of white phosphorus and cluster bombs. But anyway, these are in dispute. Anyway, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. At the end, I want to say that democracy never comes by war. Please raise your voice, great Democrat American people, first of all, against the war crime of your government. And I want to say they will destroy all of the flowers, but they never can stop the spring. No history except occupation, and no nation can donate liberation to another nation.
Her book is called A Woman Among Warlords, The Extraordinary Story of an Afghan Who Dared to Raise Her Voice. She joined us from our bureau in New York. Coming up, your letters. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.